Welcome to In Conversation With from Devon Chamber, supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors. Recorded at Fresh Air Studios in Plymouth.
Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, the podcast from the Devon Chamber of Commerce, kindly supported by our good friends at Westcott's. I'm Paul Philpott, Vice Chair of the Plymouth Chamber and Director of Devon Chamber. Now, there's a slight twist today because we normally have local businesses and entrepreneurs star as our guests, and they tend to be from Devon. But today I have to be on extra, extra special best behaviour because I'm joined by somebody who I guess you could refer to as being our ultimate boss. It's the chair of British Chambers, plural, of Commerce, Sarah Howard, MBE. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Do I need to bow or do a curtsy?
You can curtsy.
Oh, yeah.
I quite appreciate an old curtsy.
Maybe not in these jeans. So let me start by asking you, what brings you down this way?
I've been invited by the Devon Chamber to speak at an event tonight at HMS Drake. Mm-hmm. So they've got this great big posh black tie do, which I think is their annual do, but also with the VE celebration as well. So I've also been to see a couple of businesses and met with some of the members today as well. So it's been really interesting. It's one of the favourite bits of what I do. So my role is to chair the board, obviously. But then in addition to that, I get to go out and meet lots and lots of members. And it's always fascinating just seeing the different things that they're doing and in locations where you wouldn't expect manufacturing, for example. So I was with Kawasaki this morning and the stuff they're doing there is amazing. And it's world leading manufacturing that they're doing. And it was just really interesting. And the stuff I learned from them and then again from the people I spoke to at lunchtime, I'll take that back to government. And I can go into government and I can just say, well, this is what's happening in Kawasaki in Devon. They've got these challenges, these successes. This is what's happening with this accountancy firm in Plymouth. You know, they've got lots of apprentices. How do they work with them? And it makes the whole thing much more real and relevant and up to date, really.
It does sound like a really cool part of your job, actually, because we forget that BCC is all over the United Kingdom. There are many, many branches throughout the UK. In fact, globally.
Yeah.
So that aspect of being able to visit businesses of all sizes and engage with businesses of all sizes, you probably get to pick up quite a few things about the shared pains that companies have, because it's not easy being in business at the moment,
tough.
Is it?
It's really tough. And if you look back, so the British Chambers of Commerce, we've got 51 chambers across the UK, and then globally we're up to 78. So massive, massive network. And we're the only business organisation like it. So your membership of your Devon Chamber, that gives you access to a worldwide network and also access to government, because we talk to government on a regular basis. So to be able to take these stories that I learn, these facts and these stories, government loves them. They really like to hear about what's really going on. So yeah, it's brilliant. I love it.
So you're practically like the eyes and ears of policymakers on the ground. You can feed that back.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I can.
So Devon's Chamber of Commerce, it's over 200 years young. I say that because hopefully it's got more than another 200 years left in it. The concept of chambers in the digital, the modern landscape that we're in, the fast changing, ever changing landscape that we're in at the moment, how do chambers remain relevant?
That's a really good question. And a lot of people think that chambers of commerce are crusty old blokes sat in oak panelled rooms smoking cigars, sat in a leather chair. And it could not be further from the truth. I mean, for starters, obviously I'm female. My president is Martha Lane Fox, who created lastminute.com. She's an entrepreneur, an amazing woman. And my director general is Siobhan Haviland. So from the beginning, when you get to know the BCC, you see it's not what you expect.
Yes.
But if you look at the businesses we attract as well, we attract a wide range of business, including digital businesses and creative industry. So we've got that whole wide range. So we really do represent everything that is happening in business across the UK, regardless of where they come from.
And a few moments ago, I said about the current business climate being fast moving and ever changing, especially if you're importing or exporting anything at the moment, you definitely need to have your finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
What sort of advice would you give to businesses who are perhaps feeling uncertain at the moment because it's such a volatile world? The UK, we've obviously going through Brexit. We've not really sorted Brexit out, you know, whether you're plus or against it. And I appreciate you can't be political with regards to things like this. But what's your message to businesses who perhaps are a bit on the edge about things?
We can't be political, but what we can do is give facts. Mm-hmm. And that's where our power lies. So we can talk about the effects that Brexit have had on businesses. And if you look at trade, obviously international trade has gone down. Across the UK, 10% of UK businesses trade internationally. 40% of chamber members trade internationally. A lot of that is down to support they get from their chambers and the network that they create. But you're right. I mean, we've had knock after knock. So in the businesses that I run, so my day job is I run a small software business, which has been going for 30 years. And then I chair a large not-for-profit leisure trust. And I'm also on the board of a large FE institution, a group of colleges. And if you look at the challenge we've had, look at the not-for-profit, we have swimming pools, so they're expensive to run. So we've had, obviously, COVID, a people-led business. We thought we'd have to make a lot of people redundant, but we didn't have to because of furlough. But we had to get through that and work out how to reopen our doors. And then I think we had a week off before we then had the energy crisis, which again, we run a lot of pools, so we use a lot of energy. And then the cost of living crisis, and then the Knicks. So it's wave after wave after wave of challenge. And I think people are a bit knackered,
actually.
Business leaders are very optimistic. You have to be, because why else would you be in business?
Exactly.
You've got to believe that you can achieve something. But I think we've had year after year after year of challenge. And we have almost got used to it, I think. And there's a reticence to really push forward for some people. But what you find is the people that are pushing forward, like, for instance, we were talking about marketing budgets at lunchtime, and one of the businesses there who runs a marketing company was saying that some people treat it as discretionary spend.
Yes.
They've held back, but it's not discretionary spend. Marketing is essential. You've got to get the word out of what you're doing. So if you have the guts, it does take guts to spend the money to invest in your business when times are tough, you're then going to come out the other side. And I think some of us have forgotten that. And when it is so difficult, I think it's easy to forget why you're doing it as well. But yeah, I think it's just knock off, knock off. What you need now is some optimism. What would be fantastic is a bit of certainty.
Yeah.
And we haven't had
that. But that's the one thing you can be certain, that there's no such thing as certainty.
I think we're a long way off any certainty at the moment. But I think talking to government gets it. They use our examples. They listen to what we have to say. So that message is getting through. We need a bit of rah, rah, rah from the government as well.
It's good that you say that, because I think when I speak to other small business owners, the consensus of opinion tends to be, oh, government doesn't get it and government doesn't understand. And when you look at the United Kingdom, it's such a diverse business landscape. You know, there's the north-south divide, there's the east-west divide, and then you've got divides within individual counties, the type of businesses, the poverty, the type of pay grades that people are on. I guess there are infinite number of questions, and they're all pretty impossible to solve, aren't they?
From my perspective, I think the key to, I hate the phrase, but levelling up is education and skills. And wherever I go, that is the subject that comes up. And if you were to look at the minutes of the first British Chambers of Commerce meeting 160 years ago, on there you'd have found skills, infrastructure and trade. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't changed. And skills is where we need to invest. And that is how we get people out of poverty. And I think there's a lot that can be done by looking at what the blockers are from people really getting a good education. I'm not talking about going to university. I'm talking about general education, learning how to work and how to move forward. And looking at this area, Plymouth, there's an awful lot going on, I've learned today. I thought I knew Plymouth, but I didn't until today. And so you have to be able to provide training for young people and the skills to then move on and get the jobs and improve their locality. And one of the things we're talking about today was soft skills. We need a new word for it.
Soft skills doesn't really work.
It doesn't. One of the colleges said power skills. Because particularly with COVID, the mastery of soft skills has not been there. And if you're not out and about talking to people, you don't really learn them. And it's that ability to pick up a phone and talk to somebody and have the confidence to do that as well, rather than hiding behind an email or behind a WhatsApp message. And this isn't a criticism at all. It's an observation that that's not necessarily there with some of our younger generation coming through.
Absolutely. And actually, whilst you have individuals who are perhaps naturally outgoing, they're drama queens and showbiz people from the moment they're born. These skills that you've just listed are things you can learn, you can practice, and nobody's kind of like, opportunity is available for everyone to take. It's just having the confidence. So do you think we're lacking in certain aspects of empowerment with regards to the youngsters that are coming up below us? Are we letting them just have a bit of an easy ride and we're not trying to push them forward enough?
Partly. I think partly it's our generation's fault because we're just too nice. Mm-hmm. We want to make everything good for everybody. We want to make everyone's life easy.
And the world's not.
No, it's really
nice.
And, and you're doing a disservice. It's like with parenting, and it goes into business as well. You can be a good parent or a responsible parent. A good parent ties their child's shoelaces. A responsible parent teaches their child how to tie their shoelaces. And it's very simplistic, but that goes through to business. Mm-hmm. You empower your staff to do what they need to do. You don't tell them how to. You don't micromanage them and just give them 100 instructions. You give them the education and the skills to learn for themselves and do it. I'm a really good example because I was rubbish at school. I went to grammar school. I came out with one grade A level. Bit of a waste of time.
Actually, I'm not far off that.
But
didn't hold you back.
No, I sang. I had a talent. I sang. Mm-hmm. And I had a great music teacher who let me skive off my lessons and go and hide in the basement and sing. And he'd accompany me on the piano. And that was what got me through school. And if I hadn't have had that, I wouldn't have gone to school, frankly. I skived off as much as I possibly could within reason. Because in those days, you didn't have truant officers and stuff on your back all the time. It was much easier to skive off then.
And they couldn't track you.
And clearly, I do not recommend that behaviour.
No, of course not.
And I joined Local Amateur Dramatic Society. You'll be surprised
yeah.
to learn.
What a surprise.
And it was that got me through. And that gave me my own sort of education that I needed. It taught me how to talk to people that weren't my parents and weren't my teacher on an equal level and just have that confidence to go and talk to people. And that's what's seen me through. And that's what got me my first job. So that's not a soft skill, is it? It's an essential skill.
It is.
It's referred to as a soft skill.
I completely agree. And it's a transferable skill.
Absolutely.
Which is why, you know, in education, I think, you know, your music, arts and drama are very much kind of undervalued. They're almost seen as being, we were talking about services earlier, companies will often classify things they buy as need to have and nice to have. And probably within the education sector, they're all need to have qualifications and nice to have qualifications.
I am a great advocate of STEAM rather than STEM.
Yes.
So was it science, technology?
English and maths.
English and maths, but English arts and maths.
Yes.
You know, I see it all the time. You've got kids who are fantastic at maths, but they're not particularly socially aware necessarily. But if they've got a bit of an outlet, whether it's arts or sport, actually, doesn't really matter. If they do something else, it really brings it out and it gives them confidence to go out into the world and really achieve. Now, so I think it's absolutely essential.
You're clearly really passionate about this because you rewarded your MBE for your work on youth skills development. And you mentioned earlier about running businesses, small businesses and software company, for example. So you're able to talk from first-hand experience about the needs of businesses when it comes to attracting skills and talent. And you're also quite passionate about equality as well in order to open up the door to attract talent from different groups of people because lots of colour and lots of flavour in an organisation, surely that's a good thing.
Yeah. And if you look at it at a very basic level, it's a good business decision. The more access to talent you have, the wider you look for your talent, the better staff you... Sorry, staff is still the right word to use?
Well, staff... See, this is it. We shouldn't be too...
No, I shouldn't worry about using the wrong words.
So staff, colleagues...
I'm very old, staff. So the more wide-ranging pool you have to call on, the better your business is going to be, the more money you're going to make. So obviously it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do to give everyone opportunities. But it makes good business sense. It's not rocket science, is it? And if that means you have to make a few adjustments around your business to get those people in, well, so be it. It's absolutely worth it. And I co-chair our Equity Commission. Mm-hmm. And we've done lots of work around policy to go to government. But there's also daft little things that I've learned. I thought I knew quite a lot about equity before I started. I knew nothing. Just daft things like, for instance, we had a chap from Mind on our board. And he said, could we send the minutes out in Word? Because they go out in PDF, so people can't muck about with them. And I said, yeah, of course. Why? He said, well, if you're dyslexic, if it's a Word document, you can manipulate the text and the colour, and then you can read it. And my reaction to that was, obviously, of course we can. Why didn't I know that? And it's been a real eye-opener. And what I'd like to see is get to the point where those aren't add-ons, they're just done. So there are so many adjustments that are made for people with a disability that actually benefit everybody anyway in day-to-day life.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think sometimes we're too scared to ask questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Through fear of being cancelled, because there is a classic cancel culture. If you say something a little bit out of line, even if your intentions are genuine, you just happen to use, as we just did, do we use the term staff, colleagues, our network or whatever. Is that holding us back from learning about each other?
I think it is, and we need to get over ourselves, frankly. For instance, I was talking to a bloke who runs a brilliant business, actually, and he wanted to, in his words, do the right thing and go for a more diverse board. He wasn't thinking about the business impact, just that he runs a good business from a good place. And he said, well, the thing that holds me back is I don't want to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And my reaction to that was, well, as long as your intent is good, then crack on, because you will learn. And if you're willing to learn and willing to be put right, then get on with it. From my own experience, that's what I found. My youngest is a trans woman, and I've made that adjustment from having a gay child to have a trans woman as a child. Mentally, it's been fine because they're my child. I don't care what they are. I was going to say happy and healthy. It's language. And I do muck up quite often. I will say he instead of they. But I do it unintentionally and I will correct myself. And what they say to me, as long as your intent is good, I think they get fed up with me sometimes because I can be really daft sometimes about it and use the wrong words. But as long as your intent is there, surely that's the right direction. The more I say they, the more I say it.
Yes.
So I think we just need to not worry about making mistakes and just think. Think before you speak as well.
Individuals I know tend to actually, I'm going to say they don't care. They do care, but they're not entirely bothered.
Yeah, not caring is not the right word, is it?
No, but you know, it doesn't actually, it everyone doesn't... makes mistakes, and sometimes you do find yourself, because we don't want to make those mistakes, we get ourselves into a cul-de-sac of apologies and we kind of like end up getting ourselves all wrapped up.
Yeah, and when they first started to transition, I struggle with saying they because it's not good English, being a grammar school girl from the 70s. Mm-hmm. I wasn't allowed to write a lot and I couldn't have said they. And again, I've got over myself. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that I find it slightly difficult on the tongue. And I've learnt and I've re-educated myself that actually it doesn't matter.
The Devon Business Show is back. Devon Chamber is bringing the Southwest's largest business event back to Plymouth Life Centre on Wednesday, the 15th of October, connecting hundreds of businesses and entrepreneurs with future clients all under one roof. With over 125 exhibitors, interactive stands, live podcasts, a networking hub, and guests from across the city and the county, this is the not-to-be-missed date for your diaries. There are many ways to get involved, including a launch party on the 1st of July, where you can enjoy a cocktail and canapés at Tinside Lido overlooking the Sound, plus our pre-show networking breakfast at Home Park's Mayflower Grandstand on the day. A limited number of stands are available. Book yours now at devonchamber.co.uk. The Devon Business Show at Plymouth Life Centre on Wednesday the 15th of October. Let's get working at networking.
So early on, you touched on the fact that a singer, you want to be a singer, I guess. Your career
did
start out as being a singer.
No.
How did Sarah Howard get...
I wanted to be a singer. I was very good. I was very talented. And I sang proper music. I did oratorio and opera and church music and stuff.
Sounds impressive. I have no idea what that is.
Posh music.
Posh music.
Posh old music.
We'll get you into another studio in a minute, then try and find a piano.
No, that's not going to happen.
Okay.
Which takes a lot of energy and a lot of power. And I was too young to go to college, so I did a year's secretarial course. Theory being I could always then feed myself, whatever happened, being practical. But towards the end of that, I realised that I had the talent, I didn't have the strength. My voice was physically just not strong enough. So I had to get a job. I answered an ad in the Times secretarial page on a Wednesday and got 5 interviews in one day. I was 18 and I took the job that offered me 200 quid more than anybody else, which turned out to be KPMG. And because this was pre-Google, I had no idea who KPMG was as an 18-year-old from Kent. Best thing I did. And it was fantastic. So I started there a week before my 19th birthday as a junior secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Worked really hard. Absolutely loved it. Different times. My first day, my first Monday there was their promotions due. So I caught the last train home. Having rung my parents, I'd go, I'm a little bit late, Mum. And just really worked hard, loved it. And after a couple of years, I was transferred into consultancy and I was the first non-graduate consultant that KPMG had. So I'm pretty proud of that because it was quite an achievement. And it was from saying yes a lot.
Yes.
And just working out how I was going to do it afterwards and just working hard. But there's not so many opportunities to do those things anymore. So for a long time, I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder that I didn't have a degree. And then I sort of turned it on its head and thought, well, I've done that without a degree, so it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
So I did consultancy at KPMG for a couple of years. And then because I'd only ever worked at KPMG, I had a bit of a, I don't know, a brain fart and went and did recruitment consultancy for a little while. And I was recruiting taxation lawyers in the early 90s, which was really hard work. And it got harder and harder. And I decided to take a summer off and go and temp because I could type. And my first temp job was at JP Morgan, and I got a job at JP Morgan within a couple of weeks.
You're dropping some very big names.
I know.
Yeah.
Purely accidental. Not the dropping, the getting the job in the first place. So I ran a checkout team at JP Morgan and loved that. Again, really hard work, but really fun. And then my husband and I wanted to start a family. And in those days, we're talking 30 years ago, you couldn't do both and work in the city unless you were earning an absolute fortune, which obviously I wasn't. I was just one of the workers. So we set up our own business, which is a software company. And part of that was so that I could always work. So when the kids were small, I didn't work very much at all. I just ran the business and did the accounting bits and the VAT and all that sort of stuff.
So you're not a coder then? You're not a coder geek?
I am very purposely not a coder.
Okay.
I've maintained my ignorance as a point of principle. Although I did once sit on the help desk and someone phoned. I said, have you turned it off and on again? And he tried it and it worked.
Yeah, we do that a lot here in the studios. Yeah, turn it off and on again.
So did that and say, I worked a couple of hours, some weeks, sometimes more when the kids were at nursery. And I had my two girls quite close together. There's only 18 months between them. And then my trans daughter was 4 years gap. And I just got involved in local stuff. And the thing that led me to the chamber, first thing I did was I became a school governor at my daughter's school. And that was very purposeful because I either became a governor or I joined the PTA. And my cakes are awful. They look like burnt biscuit. So I thought I'm going to be better off joining the governing body. Did that, chaired it. And then that gave me a bit of confidence that I could get involved in something. And then I got involved in the local Chamber of Commerce, moved up to Suffolk, had a small business, and I wanted to know what was going on locally. So I joined that and ended up chairing it. And while I was doing that, I was invited to join the Suffolk Chamber Board. Mm-hmm. And then I eventually became president of the Suffolk Chamber. And while I was president of the Suffolk Chamber, a space came up on the British Chambers Board, and I applied for that. I had to have an interview. It was my first interview for about 25 years.
Ooh.
Got on the board and then got more and more involved in it. And you can imagine when I got on the board, I had no aspiration to chair. I was just really pleased to be there and sat there with my imposter syndrome being nursed quite successfully. And then got more and more involved, worked out what I thought we should be doing. And so I stood as chair and got elected as chair. And I'm coming to the end in October will be the end of my second term. So I will have done 2 3-year terms.
And then at which point you have to step down to make way for
them? Yep. I'm dreading it because I love it. But the governance is
you're going to have
maximum.
Too much time in your hands.
I know. I need to find something else big to do, don't I? Because I've learned so much around the skills and also trade, because everything I'm really interested in is in international trade as well. So I need to make sure I've got something to go to wean me off this, really, because it is so interesting and I just love doing it.
You touched on it earlier. Chambers are often viewed as being a bit stuffy. We're certainly not that.
No.
Definitely not within the Devon and the Exeter and the Plymouth Chambers of Commerce. Crumbs, if you come to our board meetings, you know how we really don't take everything too seriously, because you can't. Life's too short. Life is far too short for that.
And also, we're doing it for free as well. We are volunteers.
Absolutely.
So you've got to get some fun from it.
I love working with SMEs and working on behalf of SMEs. We're just starting a creative services group to help fellow businesses in our industry because they're challenging times. But one thing you do notice is that still there's an imbalance with regards to gender equality in the boardroom.
Right.
Not ours, but when you look at other businesses that we work with, what would you say with regards to inspiring young women to take on board positions and get more actively involved in business?
That is interesting, because across the network, if you look at the CEOs of the chambers, we are pretty evenly matched. Where we are not so well matched is on the non-execs, the presidents and the chairs. And I find it's usually because of the time constraints, the perceived time constraints that stops women from doing it, because we've got the responsibilities. And with the best one in the world, in most relationships, it is the woman that takes the brunt of the childcare, right or wrong, whatever, it just is. And I would just encourage people to do it. Just give it a go. And the people was, oh, so how'd you get to where you are today?
Yeah.
So, well, I just did it.
Hard work. Yeah. A little bit of luck.
Oh, definitely some luck. But like we said earlier, saying yes and worrying about how I was going to do it afterwards and just taking the opportunity. I'm really, really lucky because my husband, we've been married for 30 years, and this is his idea of hell, doing the stuff I do. He's a brilliant, brilliant techie geek, consultant, programmer. And he is at his happiest sat in a dark room with four screens in front of him, tapping away and not talking to anybody. That is his happy place. So this stuff, he's got no desire to do it, but he absolutely believes it should be done. So the fact that I do it on his behalf as well, really, so he's really supportive, which is essential. And I think particularly doing this, it could damage some people's egos, some partners' egos, and he's fine.
Yeah.
So that has a massive impact, having a supportive spouse. I'm not saying he's going off doing the house, the childcare or whatever, so I don't. Just being there supportive and saying, yeah, go on, you do it. really, really helped.
See, this is how a partnership works. I'm actually going to throw a bit of personal reflection because my partner is a software engineer by trade, hates doing anything on stage or in public. Next week, the business has been asked to speak on stage at the Media Production Technology Show at London's Olympia, which is his idea of absolute hell. So, of course, it comes to me, put on the hat of our sister company, and I'm going to be doing it because chalk and cheese, yin and yang, it sounds like you've got a really good relationship. The one thing I would be kind of concerned would be how on earth do you find the opportunity to build in your health and well-being? So getting some mental breaks.
Yeah, I'm really rubbish at it.
Relax. Yeah, but you've got to do it. So how do you chill and relax?
I've got a lot better recently, actually. As a family, been under a lot of pressure because my eldest daughter isn't very well. Mm-hmm. She's brilliant. She's a 28-year-old engineer and she's got problems with her liver. She's got liver disease and she's now on the transplant list. So we went from having a reasonably healthy family to her being in hospital a lot last year from August to Christmas.
Sorry to hear that.
So it happens. It's life, isn't it? It happens. You talk to anyone, they've got something going on. So we've really had to adjust the way we work. And I've been a lot more purposeful about giving myself some time. I grab it where I can. So yesterday, I live over near Cambridge, so coming here is a long journey. So I made sure I came down and I got here by about 4 o'clock. And I had a lot of work to do, but I just dumped my stuff and I went for a walk. And I went for a walk out on the Hoe. It was just beautiful yesterday, wasn't it? Well, it is today, but it was just stunning. And there were some VE Day celebrations going on. So I sat and listened to that. I sat and had a coffee. And I just gave myself about an hour and a half. And then I went for a swim. And then did my work. And I think giving myself...
You don't
myself,
do that while swimming, Mel,
no,
like
I did
you,
do you? Oh, that's afterwards. Good. It sounds sad, doesn't it? Give myself a little two-hour holiday like that makes the world of difference. And making sure I go out and walk the dogs when I can and those sorts of things, just to give my brain a bit of rest, I think is really important. And that, again, going back to my daughter and the way I've had to pivot, working out that the people I work with are great as well. I knew it anyway, but they've proved it. Over the last 6 months, the way the BCC's really supported me and changed the way they work with me as well. So I do things in much shorter bursts now, rather than doing it across the entire week here and there. It's been fantastic just to see that change and that support that I've had. It's kind of a good business, isn't it?
Absolutely. And actually, if you apply that to the concept of chamber in general, peer support, not just networking for networking's sake, but actual peer support is one of the really good things that you can get out of being a member of your local chamber, isn't it?
Yes. And that's the reason I joined in the first place, because we're a small business and I just wanted to find out what the challenges were. It's a bit like with the kids. When I had my first daughter, I had no idea what I was doing because none of my friends had children. I'd moved to a new area. So I joined a parents group. And then with the business, I joined my local chamber just to get a bit of peer support. Didn't realise that's what it was, but just to hear the challenges and the opportunities, not necessarily from finding new clients, but just finding out how people run their business.
I think it's also nice to know that you're not the only one.
Yes.
If you're going through a tough time or you can't get A, B and C sorted, or you're just a bit foggy, it's somehow comforting to know that there are actually others in the same position. They might not have the answers, but at least you know you're not out on a limb.
Yeah. I was talking to one of the businesses recently, and last year in my business was our worst year we've had in 30 years. It was tough, really, really tough. Mm. And then as from February, we've now got more work than we can do. And I was talking to business today and they showed me their graph, and they were talking in millions of pounds, and I'm not talking about those levels, but their graph was the same. And it was just really interesting to find that, yeah, it's not just me. I was worried because I'd taken my eye off the ball a bit because of my daughter. But no, it's just the way it was last year and that they are picking up as well. So, yeah, it makes you feel a lot better that it's not just you. Or if it is just you, finding out it is just you and what you do about it as well. Mm. Finding a solution from someone else's experience.
So if we jump forward 5 years, obviously you won't be in this post in 5 years' time, but you look back at the Chamber Network. Mm. What would you like to see has happened in those 5 years?
Well, I think the Chamber Network is a fantastic animal anyway. You've got 51 chambers in the UK, all with their own CEO. So each one is different from the other, but they've all got the same purpose, which is improving business and therefore lives in their locality and supporting business through trade, infrastructure, skills, and all that stuff. I would like to see it grow. Membership organisations are under pressure generally because the way people want to pay for things has changed. People are always a subscription or getting something for free than they are from membership.
And there's that nice to have, need to have thing
exactly
as well.
Yeah. But we do tend to find actually in difficult times, membership goes up because people are looking for a home and looking for support. So I'd like to see us grow, so buck the trend mm-hmm. of other membership organisations and grow and just bring more different businesses in. We need to embrace AI, obviously, and people say, oh, what's AI? I've got no idea what it is. Again, one of the things I'm talking about with businesses today was what is AI and how do we make it a tool and use it well? So to embrace digital, to move on, to be supporting our businesses as much as we possibly can and just continuing to contribute.
Yes.
I think. And also the awareness of chambers has increased massively over the last few years. Just continue that and just build more and more and more and grow and be giving back more to our communities, really.
I like the fact that you mentioned the chamber network individually because, yes, it does consist of many different chambers who are pretty much unique. Mm. Each one is different and each one is able to service the needs and requirements of its local area in a truly kind of one-to-one level. There's no two chambers are the same.
No.
Obviously, you've got the BCC umbrella looking after everything from a national point of view and most certainly from a policy-making point of view and feeding back into government. Again, that's another great power of chamber. You've got that channel of communication. If you want to get a message to government, well, you can go to your local MP. You can use the chamber for that as well. It's almost frustrating when people aren't a member, isn't it?
Yeah. You think, why wouldn't you join?
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I joined was to make the connections. But then the reason you stay is you see what's happening with policy. And you also realise that you do have a route to government. You've got that grassroots to government access that you get regardless of your size of business. If you've got a problem, you can go to your chamber and it can be raised. I've picked up a few recently. I've done a lot of travelling the last few weeks. And the information and the examples I've gathered, I will go back to the team and talk, I have already actually, talk about them. And that will then feed through to government, which will help towards policy making.
Absolutely.
And what other organisation can you be part of that does that?
Well, then governments can't make policies about things they don't know about.
And I did a meeting when government changed over, the first meeting. You've got the B5. So the B5 is us, CBI, Make UK, IOD and FSB. And I did the meeting with Johnny Reynolds, his first as Secretary of State for Business and Trade. So we all had our bit. And I said, well, I can give you a load of figures if you want, which I can leave with you. But what I am seeing is this business in Luton has got this issue. This business in Plymouth is doing really well. But if we could just do this, they could do better. And we use real life examples. So we're not political at all. We are completely apolitical. But we can challenge by using examples, real life, living, current examples of what's actually going on. And that is really, really powerful.
Absolutely, yeah. Very, very powerful. So to close then, I'm going to put you on the spot. You've got a lot of experience in business. You've got a lot of experience visiting businesses. You must have picked up some pretty good killer tips in your time and on your travels. So are you able to give us top three takeaways that you would either advise businesses or recommend that organisations or individuals that work and are in business leadership do?
From an individual perspective... Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at reading sort of self-help books and...
Fluff.
Yeah, I'm rubbish at that sort of stuff. But there was a brilliant, brilliant video. It's on YouTube of Tin Minchin when he went back to his university and gave his speech. And he talks about it's great to have a 5-year plan. You've got to have a plan. But don't ignore the bright, shiny stuff on the periphery. Those are things that really drive you forward. And I think that's very true, whether it's your personal life or your business life. You've got to stay open for different opportunities. And that's what will really drive you forward. I think as an SME as well, it's easy to just do the work. It happened to us in the early 2000s. We had a couple of clients. One of them was a really big client. And we were working so hard on that big client. We weren't looking at new clients. We lost them because they lost their client. We were subcontracting. So overnight, we lost 80% of our income. And I had to make people redundant. And it was tough. And that was our own fault because we hadn't diversified. We'd been too busy doing the work and not setting time aside to look for the next piece of work. So I think always keep an eye on the future and build a range of clients. So that's two things. So third thing, what would I say for the third thing? If I look around, you'll say I'm being a bit woke here, but no, you wouldn't. Sorry, you wouldn't. I beg your pardon. One might say I'm being a bit woke here. But the best businesses are the diverse businesses. They're the ones that really support their colleagues. They make their business a good place to be and somewhere that somebody wants to be. If you look at young people now, it's completely different. Say, I went for my first job because they offered me more money than anyone else did, 200 quid more. But now, when home ownership is so far out of reach for so many young people, they look at other things and they want a good place to work, a business with purpose, a business that's going to support them, business that is fun to work in. So I think if you run a diverse, creative, supportive business, you're going to get the right people, the right team, and that will push your business forward.
Excellent. Very well said. And thank you.
That was quite good, actually, wasn't it?
We'll take that. We'll use that as something called a soundbite. Yeah, we'll give that to you. You can put it on your LinkedIn. You never know. You might get a new job. So thank you very much for sharing so much with us. And we genuinely wish you the very best for the family as well. Sarah Howard, MBE, thank you for joining us in the conversation with.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
In Conversation With is supported by Westcott's Chartered Accountants and Business Advisors, helping with all your business and personal taxation needs. Westcott's, we're here. Produced by Fresh Air Studios, full audio and video production services for business podcasts and corporate events. Visit freshairstudios.com. Produced by Paul Philpott. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess Moon. Video production by Mark Stevenson. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Copyright Devon Chamber and Fresh Air Studios Limited. All rights reserved.